Arm's Length Reporting, for investors who want the whole story. This is the Corlin Economics Report.
Hey, welcome in. Time from KER Politics. Hope you guys had a good week. Jimmy and I had a lot of fun doing the daily editorials. We're getting some very, very good response, I want to say, on our blog, getting a lot of input from many of our listeners, and we certainly appreciate that. We're going to start out today talking about a headline that came out yesterday. The unemployment numbers came out yesterday, and the response from the press was that this was the quickest recovery under any president for the last quarter of a century, if I'm not mistaken. I have to say we are not anywhere near in a recovery. I'm going to elaborate on that later, and I would like Jimmy to do the same thing first. Jimmy, you're on, bud.
So, interestingly enough, Breitbart is reporting that the White House Communications Office and the White House senior officials have been reaching out to corporate media editors, managers, CEOs, and asking them to spin the economy in a better way. And so what we're seeing now, and it's interesting because this report came out last week, and then immediately your CNBC, CNN, a lot of the people that have been worried about inflation, that have been worried about the unemployment numbers, that have been worried about the lack of people in the workforce, are coming out and actually speaking, hey, this optimistically, we're only 6.8% inflation today. What it shows me is a completely disingenuous media, administration, a regime that wants to manipulate people's information as much as possible and not face the reality that, boy, the economy dumped unbelievably deep with the COVID. So yes, of course we should be out of this already. We should be well ahead of the position we are right now, but we're a year into this administration and we're still failing to get people back to work. People aren't going back to work. Inflation's out of control. Your wages are not keeping up with inflation, even though there is some wage rise. And basically, there's a lot of insecurity out there about the economy. But again, the media is trying to spin it another way, and they're doing it on behalf of an administration that's more focused on perception than reality.
Well, do you have any thoughts on what I'm about to say here? And what I'm about to say is maybe that's a good thing. Maybe that'll get people together to start to work. What do you think about that?
You know, I don't think that's going to happen when you're continually asking corporations to mandate vaccinations, when you're continuing to spread the fear of Omicron, when you're continuing to, the governor of New York making everyone wear masks. I think there's other issues. They're very deep issues that are affecting the country that I don't think that spinning it is going to benefit anyone because it doesn't face the reality of a massive debt, of overspending, of the inflation numbers that are going to crush small businesses, crush cheaper people, people on the lower end of the economic spectrum, fuel prices that are skyrocketing. You know, it's not going to help that. And you can talk good about it all you want, but it's not going to actually help the fundamental problems that they have by regulating out U.S. Oil independence and gas independence, energy independence.
Well, Jim, I wanted
and,
to make a few.
You're not going to.
Go ahead.
No, I'm watching this. The reality here is only going to what they're the decisions and the processes, pushing on a green climate agenda, by saying that Biden signed an executive order saying that the federal government's going to be carbon neutral by 2030. That is impossible. How are you going to make aircraft and tanks carbon neutral? How are you going to make the GSA fleet completely carbon neutral? How are we going to be able to afford those types of changes, transitions to electric vehicles? And then somehow that's going to magically get electricity without producing it? These are absolutely unattainable and lying realities to accommodate a very small percentage of the population that supports the base of the radical ideologues on the left. And it's just unfortunate because it's not reality.
Jimmy, the one thing I want to say is this. I don't disagree with you at all, being an economist. I don't disagree. I've been thinking about doing this interview here for probably the last hour or so. I've been up quite a while already today. We're recording this, by the way, ladies and gentlemen, relatively early here on the West Coast on Friday morning. Now, a strong economy is based on a number of things. The easiest numbers to juggle happen to be, as an economist, I'm going to tell you, happen to be the employment numbers. They are very, very easy to juggle. But when you look at an economy that is in a, let's say, a mode of recovery, there are many other things you have to consider. The one thing that you have to consider, bar none, is inflation. Our inflation right now is a little bit out of hand. You're absolutely correct. The other thing you have to consider is you have to consider GDP growth. Our GDP growth right now is not nearly as strong as it could be. We're pretty low, actually. Another thing that's very important to me is the psychological health of the populace. I would have to say that if I'm going to focus on talking about the environment in the United States, specifically the psychological environment in the United States, I'm going to say it's not really particularly wonderful. If I had the opportunity, I'm not sure at this moment I'd want to live in a country where you have the level of day-to-day violence that we have. I'm not sure I'd want to live in a country where it would appear that the president and the vice president don't really particularly get along. I noticed yesterday that the president and the vice president, Harris and Biden, were not sitting next to each other during the situation in terms of the, I don't want to call it a funeral, but it actually was a funeral in the government building. I thought that was a little weird. I particularly am not totally ecstatic with what's going on in the United States right now in terms of the mental attitude. Mental attitude is very important to me. But I want to say one thing in terms of what you're talking about, in terms of the mandates I am firmly convinced in terms of wearing masks, et cetera, are really not necessary. And I think what we're looking at here is government control. If the government right now is in fact asking, and I'm not saying they're not, but I'm saying if they are asking the press to spin things to get people's attitude in a better spot, if they can accomplish that with a populace, more power to them. Jimmy, you're on, bud. You got 2 minutes.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, I believe that the government's role is to actually benefit the people, not to manipulate them. And the reality is people are in a very difficult situation right now, and they're very frustrated with continuation with these mandates, especially in the, you know, states, you know, California and Washington and New York. In fact, the governor of New York has just declared that everyone indoors must wear a mask, and there's a $1,000 fine for it. So, you know, these types of pressures are absolutely contradictory to trying to make the community better or happy. By continuing to spend without actually understanding where the money will come from, we'll just print more, you're not making people more comfortable. With inflation increasing, you're not making people more comfortable. So just lying about it in the media is not going to bring confidence. People are willing to buy things right now if they can do it. But you know what? People are driving right now, driving to work or driving to school or going on vacation, paying 50% higher gas rates than they did a year ago.
I realize that. That's significant. I realize that.
Yeah. So the reality is we have less money in our pockets as the inflation goes up. The wages aren't keeping up.
Jimmy, I want to keep this discussion going. Unfortunately, we've got to take a real quick 30-second commercial break here. I want to discuss this in the next segment. I want to discuss not only this, but I want to discuss the national debt, which is absolutely a critical situation. And I want to discuss the mental health of the nation, as I'm going to do throughout the second hour of KER Report. I'm going to talk about that with Dr. John Huber. Ladies and gentlemen, I'm going to be right back with Jim McKinney. Stick around.
Your weekly fix on finance and investing. This is the Corlin Economics Report.
Welcome back. Okay, Jimmy, I want to say that I don't disagree at all with what you're saying right now. I think it's false information for anybody who has any knowledge whatsoever of economics to say that we're in a recovery right now. The fact of the matter is, if you want to believe that we're in a recovery, and if that makes you feel better, more power to you. I believe it is, in a very real sense, false reporting right now. All you have to do is look at, and I don't mean a dead horse here, all you have to do is look at the inflation numbers, the debt numbers, etc., etc., and the amount of, what's even more important is the amount of people who really don't want to go back to work because the government is continuing to support them. But let's talk a little bit, Jim, about the mental health of the country right now. That's my main concern. People are getting shot. People are getting killed every day in the streets because of the level of frustration on the part of a segment of our society that is probably pretty sick. That's something that has to stop. Jimmy, your comments on that. Remember, this segment is 8 minutes and 15 seconds.
Yeah, so Al, I am very worried about the health, the mental health of the population. We do know from last year suicides skyrocketed. We know that a lot of children, the mental capacity, the IQ rates for young children that were masked declined nearly 20% according to a study that is done every year for the last 20 years. IQs ages 2 to 5 year olds had dropped from around 100 to in the 70s, partly because those basic instincts that we learn from each other by looking at each other, by smiling, by understanding our environment around us and actually learning from that is really completely changed based on these mandates, the face masks and, of course, the isolation, the separation, and the fear. So
yep.
Our population is in a very serious risk. It's continuing, and just like the lies with the economy, I believe that right now it is propaganda in order to control people, and these are the same types of lies, and I don't think our government should be in the position to mandate these things when there's no justification for it. And when there should be
now, when you say to mandate these things, without justification, you're talking right now about the lockdowns, correct?
I'm talking about lockdowns. I'm talking about vaccine mandates that aren't working. I'm talking about mask mandates in many places. People are done with it. They're emotionally frustrated. They're fed up. They don't know how to stand up. But the government continued. This administration continues to push these agendas through their Department of Health, through the Health and Human Services, through Anthony Fauci. And they're doing it, I think, at the detriment. I think it's all for control and it's for political ends. The same with the economy. They're trying to spin the economy to make it look better for them for the midterm election so they can continue to stay in power. They're trying to continue to lock people down, trying to keep these mandates so they keep people afraid so that they can do mail-in ballots and they can manipulate the system with mail-in ballots because they have no moral high ground, no moral code that tells them that they can't manipulate the system any way possible with any ramifications, especially when they run the Department of Justice, which we see is absolutely embarrassingly politicized these days.
Well, it is. There's no question about that. The one place where there are a lot of places. I wouldn't be as close to Jim McKinney as I am if I didn't really admire the guy. Jimmy puts his money where his mouth is. Jimmy is actually picking up stakes and moving to a different part of the country because he doesn't like what's going on, particularly in the state of Washington. And all of that centers around two very, very important issues. One of them is the educational system, and the other one is the mandates. His children need to, every single day that they go to school, they need to have a COVID test, day in and day out. And the reason they need to do that is because Jim's research has proven, and I happen to agree with his research and other people's research, that COVID testing on a daily basis is a bit of an extravagant thing that really doesn't have to be done. People in non-risk categories don't need to be tested every single day. people in non-risk categories, especially children, don't need to wear masks 24/7, including in New York City, apparently, when they're in their own homes. That's ridiculous. That is something that is frightening Jim, and it's frightening me also. It is showing that we are having a huge amount of control by the government. And a good example that I'm about to prove is when you look at Governor Cuomo in New York and his brother who was fired from CNN, you want people like that telling us what we have to do? Do you want people telling us what we have to do like Andrew Cuomo, who basically forced people to go back into nursing homes when they died? I don't think so. I think that is the main problem with our country right now. I'd say that the main problem right now, as significant as it is, yes, we can pull out of this economically, but the control that's going on by people who are totally unqualified, as is happening in New York and as is happening in California, is something I do not want to see happen, and I simply can't support that. Jimmy, we got about 2 minutes left here.
Yeah, I absolutely. You know, that's why I made the decision. You know, my daughters. You know, my son's out at Clemson right now, and he had AP calculus last year at school, locked down. You know, over the computer. He goes out there and he has to retake it, and it's a challenge because he didn't really learn anything, even though he was valedictorian at the school. I don't want that for my children. No one really wants that for their children. They want the opportunity for them to learn, live good lives. And yep. I think that's really important for our society to continue to push for that. And yes, these individuals, these political leaders are using the justification to help and protect people. But the reality is they're not helping anybody in the long run because the risk is just not that high. It has been the largest, in my view, propaganda campaign and the biggest fear campaign in human history over this vaccine for less than 1% fatality rate, and very specific groups that we could have protected, and we're not. We're pushing it on everybody, and I think it's just it's terrible. We continue to stress out our society. We continue to stress each other out, and you're darn right. I'm going to some place Joe Biden, the governor, said, hey, look, I'll fight you to the gates of hell before I force vaccine mandates. And where people respect each other, regardless of their race, regardless of their creed. You know, I'm done with the place like Washington State and Jay Inslee and these leftist ideologues.
I don't disagree, Jim. You're cutting in and out a little bit. So let me wrap this up. We got less than a minute here. Let me just say this. We live in a country where a guy like Jesse Smollett is basically costing the taxpayers huge amount of money with these ridiculous trials. Absolutely ridiculous. Unfortunately, our connection is getting worse and worse here, so we're going to wrap up this particular segment of KER Politics. Going to be back for the second hour. Going to be chatting with Dr. John Huber.
To find out more about today's guests, visit us on the web at www.kereport.com. You're listening to the Corlin Economics Report. We'll be back in a moment. Providing unique reporting on markets and companies since 1990. This is the Corlin Economics Report.
Hey, welcome in. Time for the second half of KER Politics. Got Dr. John Huber on the line with me right now. You know, this week, aside from today, the news this week has been really pretty bad every single day. John and I are recording this, by the way, on Thursday. And when I say the news has been pretty bad, I mean, you got the desecration of Christmas trees. You got Christmas trees being run over by cars. You got Christmas trees with gasoline poured on them and then lit on fire. You have the Fox Christmas tree that was lit on fire in front of it back in New York City. That is, to me, an indication of a lot of anger, Big John. You want to comment? Is it anger or is it just stupidity, in your opinion?
Well, I think it's a lot of both. I mean, you know, it's they're taking something that, you know, yes, we do it for the season, but what do we do at the end of the season? We throw it away. So they're really not, you know, destroying anything that we're going to keep for the next, you know, 5 years or 20 years. It's not like, you know, they're vandalizing a car or somebody's home. But at the same time, it's a dangerous risk. And, you know, you could kill people. You know, fire's not a safe thing to be uncontained and uncontrolled. And lighting a Christmas tree on fire, you don't know what all it's going to cause to catch on fire. And then you start thinking about what is, you know, the question is it anger? You know, I think a lot of people in this country, whether you're well-informed or misinformed or have no clue, are very frustrated, period, across the board. Well, and some people take that frustration and they turn it into depression. And, you know, depression is really, you know, over-controlled anger turned in towards yourself. Yeah. And a lot of people don't have those control mechanisms. So in some ways, people with depression are kind of over-controlled internally by themselves. In other ways, they're not, because they can't turn the anger off and quit redirecting it to themselves. But these people who are acting out in violence, they literally have no emotional control, and it's just easier for them to blow up. And if you're talking about men in our society, anger is like the only emotion that we're allowed to have, you know. And what I mean by that, across cultures and everything else, an angry man is okay. If the man's crying in some cultures and in families and things like that, hey, he's concerned, you know, he's had a loss, all this kind of stuff. But the rest of society starts putting that man down as weak and being emotional and overreacting. But if he's angry, oh, he's got obviously a real reason to be angry. So let's get out of his way. And they make excuses and let men be angry. So they're reinforced with the only emotion that socially across the board, everybody says is okay for them to have. And it doesn't make them appear weak. It doesn't make them appear effeminate or any kind of anything else that might be discredited to them. And it's an easy thing to do, you know, and then you get this adrenaline rush and you feel good for the moment. So it's self-rewarding. And because of that, it just makes it easier to escalate.
Let me interrupt you for a second. I'm getting a little confused. Where does the adrenaline rush come from?
When they act out in violence, when they actually act out in violence, that's where that adrenaline rush comes out. Especially, you know, when they light that fire and they see that fire just enveloping that tree, you know, it's a major adrenaline rush. I mean, that and I don't know that personally. I do know, you know, as a martial artist, you know, when you get into the fight and you're able to take somebody down, you get that adrenaline rush. And I also know, as a forensic psychologist, talking to perpetrators and of different crimes and working with them, you know, they get really reinforced. In fact, for some of them, that adrenaline rush becomes a sexual turn on, and they become very sexualizing that act, and they want to release that, and that can, you know, cause problems at home and such. But you know, that's a whole nother subject, because that's not what's being brought up to our attention in the media today. The sexualization of it. It's just the anger itself.
Well, it's coming up, being brought to our attention. There's no question about that. But for example, yesterday, Thursday, on the 9th of December, the headline on a lot of the wire services that I subscribe to basically said, has Biden presided over the quickest recovery in the history of the United States in the last 20 years? Why would people be angry if they believe that, John?
Well, because they don't believe it. You know, having people go back to their businesses that the government shut down 2 years ago and telling them they can open back up isn't really a recovery. I mean, honestly. So
it's probably one of the wisest comments from an economic standpoint, Doc, that you've ever made. Go ahead.
And I think people see that and they realize that. You know, and it's you've got just inflation just skyrocketing. You know, 18 months ago, we had here in Texas, we had $2 a gallon gas. And we thought that was kind of high, because some places it'd be $1.80, $1.90 a gallon. And now we're looking at $3.79, $4 a gallon here in Central Texas. It's doubled in 18 months. And And then he turns around and gives us relief by taking our emergency reserves and dumping that back into us that we have to pay for now that we already paid for once when we bought it for the emergency reserve in the first place. And it lowered our gas prices, but it didn't, because we've already paid for it once and now we're paying for it a second time. Well, at the pump instead of at our tax dollars.
I look at inflation a little differently. I was out shopping for an office chair today. I'm spending more and more time in the office because I want to get. I really want to stay close to the bloggers on our site. And the only way I can do that is sit in front of my computer at least 8 or 9 hours a day. And I'm happy to do that. But the chair that I bought for $100 3 years ago, to replace it today is $200, Big John.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Everything, you know, and they say, oh, it's only 5% inflation. Well, first of all, that's highest we've ever had in 40, 50 years since Carter was in office. Yep. But I'm looking at it. It's not just 5%. It's double. Like I said, with the gas prices, it's doubled the price of gas, the price of products. Like you said, we paid $100 for, you know, 2-3 years ago, are now $200. You know, the reality of it is it's a lot worse. And, you know, they're tired of the media just being a cheerleader and telling everybody what we need to think. And I think it's finally hit home.
Yeah, but let me ask you this. Is the average American, is he really aware, he or she really aware, that media is nothing more than a cheerleader right now? Maybe we need the media and the BS that they're putting out to get us back on track, Johnny. I don't know. I don't think so. But maybe that's what's going on, bud.
Well, you know, and it could be, because, you know, having been fighting COVID and recovering and stuff, I'm not out, you know, meandering with people and talking like I normally am. But I talk with my kids, and my kids are even, you know, 16 and 19 are going, oh, my God, look at the prices.
Yeah.
You know, and you know, they've had jobs for a couple of years now. And so they've got their own spending money. And it's kind of like, Jesus, you know, why did I put all that money in the bank? I should have spent it when I could have bought stuff at a decent price.
Right.
You know, and I think people, you know, if they do pay attention to the news, I think a lot of people are just turning it off really right now. But there's people who aren't, and they're coming back and they're jumping all over people and they're spreading misinformation, and they're the cheerleaders within their own family or within their community or their, you know, sports team or whatever, and everybody listens to them because, well, they listen to the news, so they must know. And they're tired of it. I think as a society, we are just tired of the BS.
So basically, you're saying the news media right now, in your opinion, is just the concept of fake news is really first and foremost going on right now. John, I want to keep you around for one more segment here. I want to know what's going on with your COVID. You guys remember, if you didn't hear the show last week, remember that John was double immunized, but he regardless contacted COVID. He was in the hospital for, he's going to tell us how long, and then it was at least a couple of weeks, and he's just recovering right now. We're going to hear about that in the next segment. Okay, coming back at you, John.
All right.
Here to wrap up KER Politics, you know, we were talking with John Huber in the prior segment about the cheerleading that's going on in the country. The headline on Drudge right now, one of the headlines, aside from the ridiculous trial that's going on right now, portrayed to be guilty. But having said that, that's really not something that's critical to the United States, in my opinion. What's really critical to the United States, in my opinion, is what John just went through. John, your daughter came home from a homecoming dance. She knew that she had been exposed to COVID. The whole family was then exposed to COVID with your daughter's situation. And I'm not pointing a finger at all, because I will meet
your daughter.
I'm sure. But, you know, you guys weren't really quite sure what to do. You contracted it. You're about in your very early 50s right now.
Yeah.
Which is not even close to being a high-risk category, and yet you almost died in the hospital. Let's hear a recap of that, John, and then let's talk about how you're doing today.
you know, basically, you know, you kind of told it in a nutshell. Of course, you know, I'm one of those, you know, healthcare providers that, you know, tend to be, you know, hey, I'm not going, I can handle this because, you know, I've seen my patients go through worse. And so when I finally did go, I was at death's door. Apparently, my doctors told me that, and they told me before they discharged me that they had expected me to leave through the morgue. So
yeah, I remember that was
you know, kind of eye opening. So I get back, and they say, you know, it's probably going to be about 3 months for you to get your lung functioning back. That's what it averages, you know, out to be for most people. And several of my doctor friends are like, okay, here's the research coming out of NYU. Here's the research coming out of here. Let's get you into hyperbarics. So I've been doing hyperbarics daily except for Sunday, and I didn't schedule today. I don't know why I didn't schedule today, but
As I recall, you went out for a walk. Let's talk about that.
Well, yeah, and so 3 days ago, I went out for a walk just basically circling my house, and I did that without oxygen, and I had my oxygen monitor on my hand, and I was, you know, my numbers were good. Of course, I was exhausted after that little bitty walk. And then yesterday we went out and we doubled that. So today we went out this morning in between my business meetings, because I am working from home. And we did a quarter mile around the neighborhood. And I just did a second quarter mile, the same track around the neighborhood. And my numbers are good, and all without oxygen. And right now I'm just needing the oxygen to sleep at night. And in fact, the last couple of nights I pulled it off in my sleep and haven't even used it and woke up fine.
So you're doing good. John, what advice would you give people that were in your situation when your kid came home from the homecoming dance and the whole family knew but didn't really do very much, didn't take any really what I would call aggressive defensive action? Would you do that again, John?
Well, I think it would have been a little different. You know, we, of course, immediately, you know, we gave it 24 hours and then my daughter started feeling bad. We went and had her tested for COVID and she tested positive. And then we just basically started testing everybody in the family. And, you know, as we kind of went through it, and my daughter, my son and my wife, their fevers were pretty low. When I got it, you know, I felt like I had the flu, and then my fever spiked. It went really high. And that's kind of what the doctors were insinuating, that that's kind of what they look for, is a higher temperature,
yeah,
not just a high temperature. And that's kind of, those are the people, that's one of the criteria that even if I'd have come in earlier with that higher temperature, they probably would have admitted me just because of the higher temperature. But I didn't know that, you know, I mean, you know, they're not telling us those kinds of things. And so what I would recommend you do, you get COVID, schedule an appointment with your doctor and go get checked out right then. And then they will tell you what the current guidelines are for when to come back to the hospital, when to go back to the doctor's office, and that kind of stuff. You need to listen to those people. And, you know, I know a lot of them, you know, they're following the CDC stuff. But when it comes down to patient care, you know, you're their patient. They're responsible for you. So they're going to tell you what they professionally believe is the best thing to get you out and recover through recovery. So that's why you need to go do that.
John, as a PhD psychologist, I know you're not an MD, but what would you recommend that people do? I mean, I have a number of listeners who are talking about various concoctions today. Take a lot of vitamin D, take a lot of vitamin C, take a lot of zinc. What about the other two concoctions that are out there?
The ivermectin and the hydrochloroquine, I was taking all of those, you know. And maybe that's why I was able to recover so fast when they thought I was on death's door. The ivermectin and the hydrochloroquine. I have a physician who had, you know, had it scripted for me as prophylactic. But when I got really sick and said I needed to go see the doctor, I stopped taking everything. I mean, I was just that sick. So.
John, do you think you would have gotten better faster if you kept taking the prophylactic medication?
I don't know. Because, you know, the minute they got me in there, they put me on steroids.
Yeah.
And every 3 hours I was getting a new IV bag full of steroids. And they shot me full of heavy duty vancomycin. You know, they had a PICC line on. And so it was dumping literally, you know, a PICC line goes into your arm and it
just basically dumps all the medication right into your heart, so it doesn't destroy any of your veins and arteries and stuff like that. And that, you know, I think that that combination, on top of my preparation beforehand, and the fact that, you know, I never once lost hope during that whole time.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm cracking jokes the first day I'm on death's door.
Yeah.
You know, and the doctors were looking at me like, this guy's joking and he's about to die. You know? And I just knew I was going to get out of there. And I kept getting, you know, I had people from 30 years ago who found out I was sick, and they were sending me emails and texts saying, you got this, don't worry about it. You know, just do what the doctors say and you'll be out of there soon. And, you know,
yeah. John, tell me a little bit about the availability to Mr. and Mrs. Average America of hydrochlorphine and vancomycin. Can you just get it at the drugstore?
Well, I know a lot of the pharmaceutical companies, the main brand ones, are not, you know, they're telling their pharmacists not to to give it out for whatever reason. There's other medications that can, whatever, you know. But I recommend you go to your local.
Protect their profits, John.
Right. I recommend that you go to your local pharmacy, your compounding pharmacy, and that's where I get mine from, compounding pharmacists.
So you don't need a prescription to get either vancomycin.
Oh, you do. You do. And I'll tell you what, if you don't know a doctor who'll get them to you, if you go talk to your compounding pharmacist, they'll probably give you a list of 10 or 15 doctors in your area that'll prescribe it for you.
So really, people should be taking those compounds, correct?
You know, I think it's an option. I think, again, each person has to be responsible for their own health care. If they think it's something they should do, they should talk to their doctor about it. Their doctor is probably going to, oh, you don't need to do that. That's a dewormer, all that kind of stuff. Well, I mean, go look at the studies coming out of India that it is, you know, and Joe Rogan cites it all the time. I hate citing the new Johnny Carson of our era, but
yeah,
he does cite it. He used it. The research is out there that it is a general antiviral, not a specific one for for COVID, but it's a general antiviral.
And it does seem to work. The efficacy seems to be pretty high.
Right. And they've actually gone off and prosecuted directors of different regions of their version of the CDC in India for not allowing those to be administered by physicians in India. And the minute they let them open it back up, their death rate drops significantly. Not their infection rate, but their death rate drops significantly. So, you know, I can't tell you if it is or isn't. And, you know, they keep coming up with these new variants and stuff like that. And, you know, how do they know? The only way really to know is to do DNA testing of the virus itself when you get it. And I don't know places that are doing that. So when they say, oh, it's here, it's there, show me the DNA results on that compared to the original COVID. And then I can sit there and have a legitimate conversation with you.
I got you, Big John. John, thank you so much for going back over your situation with COVID, and thank you for your lecture, for lack of better terms, on anger. Certainly appreciate it, sir.
The Corlin Economics Report is produced for A.B. Corlin and Associates. Opinions expressed on this program are intended solely for the entertainment of our listeners, do not constitute investment advice, and are not necessarily those of this network, radio station, or our sponsors. Find out more about this program and today's guests by visiting www.kereport.com. For Al Corlin, this is Colleen Robbins. Join us again next week for the Corlin Economics Report.